we all disregard the branding effect that PR has. If you're always visible, people just, you know, get so much trust, and yeah, and then they buy you. You don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. You want to have, you know, you cannot foresee what happens in the future with paid media or with social or with SEO. So you can't just put everything into one. It's just too dangerous for your business. It will not always give you a link. It will just recommend a brand, and that will be only counted as direct traffic. So it's also not measurable.
And I think there is a real split in terms of the agency offering.
During COVID, a lot of companies stopped their marketing budgets. And they didn't notice it directly, but half a year later, it caught up to them and they lost a lot of revenue. Through AI, I don't think that a lot of content is being recognized anymore as being valuable, but these places which are heavily moderated are going to be really valuable.
We still can't quite map digital PR outputs to revenue.
We all came from the performance age, right? We could measure everything. And now we can measure less.
Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Hier hörst du Insights zu Digital Marketing Strategien und Technologien. Viel Spaß bei dieser Folge.
So, today's episode sits right at the intersection of audience understanding, digital PR, SEO visibility, and the future of search in an AI-driven world. And I think that's what we're all looking for, right? How can we get more visibility in this new AI world? And how can we actually even, you know, get more visibility in the old world, the old SEO world? Our guest is Shannon McKirk. She has her own agency called Peach Communications, and Shannon has built and scaled award-winning digital PR content and functions, usually as somebody who oversees everything, has, you know, the connections, all the different parts. So she understands how to create digital PR herself, but she also knows how to steer all these different parts that combine with link building and then, you know, social signals, and all these things come together in somebody who has done this for over 12 years. So she herself said she's a bit of a dinosaur in digital PR, but I don't think so. Adapting to the new AI world does not seem like a dinosaur. It more seems like somebody who's really in tune with what's going on. So this episode is recorded in cooperation with SMX Munich, and where Shannon is also speaking. And that's fitting because what we'll unpack today goes far beyond just, you know, strategies and tactics, but we'll really talk about why good digital PR must start with, you know, a buyer's journey and how to understand the buyer and how this mindset fuels, you know, building links, citation, brand mentions, and obviously increasingly LLM and AI search visibility. So Shannon, welcome to the podcast.
Wow, thank you so much. What an introduction. firstly, super excited to be here and on the SMX stage in just a couple of weeks' time. We had a conversation and it's definitely been on my bingo card in terms of conferences to speak at. So thank you for the warm welcome. And I'm really excited to unpack everything to do with digital PR. I think it's at a really, really interesting point in terms of a service offering and how it can tie into organic visibility. So hopefully your audience can take away some key insights here and I guess some food for thought so that, you know, when they get up for work the next day and they start to think about what digital PR can do for brands, they know where to start, they know what to think about, and they start to shift from that journey that moves beyond just link building, puts mm-hmm. their audiences at the heart of their strategies, and ties very much into consumer pain points or you know, desires, wants, needs, motivational points, because that is where we're seeing the most interesting developments in how digital PR can fuel LMM visibility. So yeah, very excited to be here. Thank you.
Amazing. Yeah. So take us through maybe what digital PR is right now and maybe mm-hmm. what it was 10, 12 years ago and what it was in between, because you definitely said like there's a shift coming where it's not only link building anymore, but now it's something different. And I really want to make it clear for the audience, what is digital PR right now?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. So I started out, as we said, about 12 years or so ago, and I started in the traditional PR world. So my background was never about the link. It was never about getting things online. It was actually trying to come up with stories that communicated, put the brand out there, but also really resonated with brand audiences. So I made the switch from traditional into digital PR and joined a company called Era Digital when they were developing out their digital PR team. That was led by Paddy Mugan, who's quite literally wrote the book on link building. And at that point, 10 years ago, we started to see agencies like Distilled, who had huge creative departments, led by Mark Johnson there. We also started to see other UK agencies like Verve Search almost create the golden tier or the golden standard for digital PR campaigns, right? They were
big hero campaigns. They went viral. I mean, the one that I always think about from Distilled was when Mark and his team uploaded... The visual was comparing how many uploads there were on Instagram in terms of pictures every day. And it was just this really simple but impactful stacked photos, yeah. Comparing it to like, I think it was something like the Empire State Building or something like that. And for me, that was the campaign that I was like, hang on a second. Traditional PR forgets that it can have a performance-based impact online. Mm-hmm. And when you think about traditional PR, you measure things like AVE, you talk about how many people you've reached. But with digital PR, because it is more of that online focus, I was like, oh, we can look at traffic, we can look at sessions, we can look at keywords. And suddenly, because I'm a little bit competitive, I was starting to see the impact of some of these online content campaigns and what they could do. I didn't really know what link building was at this point. So joined Era, and as I say, 2016 for me was a golden age or a golden era. There was lots of hero campaigns out there. We reported heavily on the link volume. Like, you wanted your campaigns to go viral. You wanted to be up there doing what Distilled were doing and stuff like that. And actually, I think, if I'm honest, I think it was a little bit easier to do that then because it was less of a competitive space. Yep. If you look at the agencies back in 2016, 2017 that offered digital PR and did it to a very high standard, there was probably 10 to 15 that we could name globally. We had Siege, we had Hopefully Era, we had Verve. You know, there were some of these agencies up and through Kaizen in the UK as well. But if you look at what digital PR has become now, it is so much more competitive. And I think there is a real split in terms of the agency offering. So in my view, what it is and what it should be is we should be looking at that buyer's journey and the funnel in particular across awareness, consideration and decision. And digital PR has a home in that awareness stage. It is not the role of digital PR campaigns to go out into the world and then to try and convert consumers to buy a product or to invest in, you know, if you're a B2B brand, to invest in a tool, that kind of thing. Instead, it's the role of digital PR to increase brand awareness, increase trust, increase authority, to make sure that the brand is out there in the right conversations, to create mm-hmm. those touch points with your online audience. And then you start to push down through the funnel. So when I go back to this agency split that we're seeing, we have some agencies out there that I think are very much tied in to that offering and they understand the role of digital PR. And then we have the secondary play at the moment going on, which is kind of caught in still volume and virality and getting out there, and they're struggling to put their campaigns into that buyer's journey in that funnel map, because the recipe for success is different and the bar has got higher. So the campaigns are very much like, I don't know, you see the same formats, you see maps, you see best cities and stuff like that. When actually now, because LMM visibility is so much more important, less is more. We want higher relevant, higher quality, higher quality led campaigns. Personally, I would take 5 to 10 offsite trust signals. And for me, that's a blend of follow, no follow, mentions for one campaign, and know that that has been so highly optimized for keywords, for internal linkings. And then I would want to, in the back end of GA, I would want to see, okay, we launched this campaign 3 months ago. It's linked to 2 product pages. Let's just say I'm an e-com fashion brand, right? We linked out to loungewear. Ah, okay, I can now see that loungewear is seeing a 10% increase in traffic. I can map that 10% increase in traffic back to that digital PR campaign. And by the way, it's performing so well because that category or product page has been optimized to a really good point over the last 12 months. And then you can start to see it's almost a performance driver, right? So I know it sits in the awareness stage, but over time, it's cumulative impact. Less is more, focus on quality, and you can start to unlock and talk about performance-led conversations with digital PR. So we're at a really interesting cross-section, I think, with the industry. We are seeing more traditional PR agencies coming into the digital PR yeah. world because they need to be performance-driven. But the one thing that I do think we still need to be quite tentative of and be very aware of is that the agencies and the consultants, the businesses out there at the moment that are saying, launch X campaign for digital PR and we will put a revenue number against it, we still can't quite map digital PR outputs to revenue, because you don't see a digital PR campaign and go, I'm going to go buy that. You see five digital PR campaigns, you see a social post, you get the newsletter in your inbox, yeah. you flip onto Instagram. So that's a very long-winded way of saying times are different, but change is good. And I think we are becoming more performance and audience driven now than ever before in digital PR, which is really exciting.
I mean, the same issue probably is for LLMs. Like if you look at ChatGPT recommendation or Gemini recommendation, like in the chat window, it will not always give you a link. It will just recommend a brand.
Yeah.
And that will be only counted as direct traffic. So it's also not measurable. I think what's really interesting, what's happening in the industry is if you look back like 20 years ago, big paper advertisements in magazines and billboards was big. It was, you know, 95% of marketing budgets compared to digital, obviously disregarding TV. And now it's kind of changed, right? It's the digital PR is getting way more important. But the interesting part is because we all came from the performance age, right? We could measure everything.
Yeah.
And now we can measure less. And so we're basically getting less performance data. And the guys who did paper are doing more digital. So we're getting together. That's really fun.
Yeah. And actually, I'm seeing this more and more working with in-house teams, that we're seeing traditional PR and content teams, they are learning that like citations are not the only important thing here, that actually we've got traditional PR teams. And I've done training for teams like this as well, where you're coaching them how to ask for links. You're coaching them on how to get the right citations. You're saying it's really, really good that you've been featured in New York Post five times, but actually we can look at a link intersect data, and where you really want to be is like, I don't know, the Chicago Tribune. So how do we do something that means that we are on the journalist radar there? And hang on a second, you got in the Chicago Tribune. Look at what that's done for the traffic going back to that product page. And again, it's becoming full circle. For me, the teams that are running really well on an agency and in-house, but mostly looking towards the in-house, are the teams that talk to each other, the traditional PR teams talking to the digital PR teams, that actually talk to the sales teams to understand what the customers are buying, why they're buying, that then talk to the customer review teams that say, hang on, that product needs developing again. We're not getting some good feedback on that. And it's a flywheel, right? That's the way I think about it. It's a flywheel, and everyone feeds into each other, and the brands that are going to do really well understand that they need to unlock those silos.
And I think sometimes you have to have a little trust into how digital PR works, right? Because it's basically very similar to SEO, right?
It takes
SEO
time.
If you want to have results within, I don't know, 2 months, you're going to be very disappointed. I mean, with digital PR, you might see some results instantly, because if they posted on big newspapers, it might work directly. But I think that we all disregard the branding effect that PR has. If you're always visible, people just, you know, get so much trust.
And come through.
Yeah. And then they buy. And then that's also, it's really interesting how this works. So during COVID, a lot of companies stopped their marketing budgets.
Yeah.
And they didn't notice it directly, but half a year later, it caught up to them and they lost a lot of revenue. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
I think it's really interesting. But looking more at the tactical ways, so looking at link building and Haro, which is obviously a more sophisticated link building technique, what do you think is happening to those right now?
I think there is a place for it, because we do see the value in, you know, broken link building, Haro, helping a reporter out. There's also other tools like that, like we see Response Source and stuff like that, for example, in the UK. So I think there is a place for traditional link building, but it needs to be part of a holistic organic search strategy. So you shouldn't, in my view, you shouldn't just be going, right, I've got £5,000 a month, I'm going to go and pay someone to get me X amount of links, because what are those links doing? Are they in the right places to where your audience is? Can you track performance back? Are they going to be causing you problems in years to come? Because let's be honest, we don't want to be doing disavow files because we haven't got the right, you know, spammy links and stuff like that. Where the more traditional link building efforts I think are still working, and what I can see, are things like broken links, resource guides, like the statistics pages work really, really, really well. So if you are, again, let's just say
I'm actually working with a client at the moment, and we have identified three statistic-led guides that we want to create. We are not going to be proactively taking those out to tier one media because they're not going to link and cite them. What we're going to do is make sure that they're really highly optimized, and then they will act as a resource for journalists, for bloggers, for webmasters to cite over time. These statistics pages are rooted in traditional PR, are rooted in traditional link building. But where we see it developing now is that they're tied to audience pain points. So one of the ones that we have come up with, for example, are around virtual offices, remote work, and digital nomad trends. Digital nomad is still it's still really prevalent. After COVID, people are still looking to go work in Bali and be a coder or a web developer. So there's still a lot of value there. So I think we can take some of the learnings from traditional link building. I don't condone buying links or anything like that. I won't stand behind that. I'm very much in kind of, you know, avoiding the black hat tactics in that sense. But I think we can take some of the traditional link building learnings, pull them up into a holistic organic search strategy, combine it with audience-led digital PR. And, you know, back to your previous point, we will see over 3, 6, 12, 24 months, 36 months, we will then see the cumulative impact of all of that coming together and hopefully more revenue going on the bottom line. But it takes time, and there needs to be a balance as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for most people, it's just easier to buy links. That's why link or just to call it link building, because it's something very technical from the SEO standpoint. Then I thought that moving into Haro was a very interesting choice, you know, helping a reporter out, like basically answering on citation questions. I'm just explaining it for the audience quickly, because Haro is something that's very popular in the UK and in the US. It's not that popular in Germany, actually. But it's basically a reporter has a platform where he can ask questions and people can offer citations basically for free or for, I don't know, even if it's paid, but it's very good for the reporter. He can get good citations really fast, and it's easier for him to work. And obviously SEOs found this and they put in a lot of citations to get cited in big media. But if you're looking at it from a, let's say more tactical way, the link building, like just buying a link is quite easy, but getting into the big newspapers is really, really hard. And I mean, that's what you're doing. And that's what link building cannot offer. And so how do you go about this?
So that comes back to that storytelling. I guess my foundations of my career were also built in storytelling, right, with the traditional PR world. So I didn't know what link building was at the time. And in order to get into those tier one publications, whether it's national news, whether it's broadcast, even with some of the niches. So again, I've worked with kind of energy clients in the past, and they want to be really famous in the green energy spaces. They're really hard to get earned media and earned citations and links into.
Oh, yeah.
You have to come back to the story that is going to create an emotional connection with the brand's audience. So you can do things like, for me, a very underutilized resource to do this is a company's internal data. So what can we extract out of the company that tells very poignant stories that then taps into cultural movements or moments? So a little bit different, but again, it's quite an interesting one. We worked with, or in a previous role, I worked with a leading e-com fashion brand, and their target audience was middle, you know, women 45 to 55. Mm-hmm. So we really tried to understand what women were going through at that period in their life. Because I'm not there yet, but I'm going to be there one day, right? So when we were doing ideation for these campaigns, we really took a step back. We analyzed what was being spoken in the media, and we took a step back and we were like, what do these women care about? Because the e-com fashion brand is trying to navigate quite a turbulent point in a woman's life, right? Middle age. They are likely, I guess, up against the following challenges: perimenopause or menopause, kids leaving for the first time, moving out, whether it's university, whether it's college, whether it's leaving to live with a partner. So what we call empty nest syndrome, that can be really, really poignant. And then starting to look ahead and think, when should I retire? Should I be going into another, almost like a second wind of life? You know, financially, I should be in a position where I'm probably in the best spot I've been in for a while because my children are starting to become independent and all of that stuff. So we looked at these themes and then we took them into a brainstorm. storm, we analyze the media to see what is being spoken about on a daily basis. And we look at, you know, pain points, topics, trends. In with menopause in particular, we uncovered that the one of the big pain points was around confidence and the fact that women going through the menopause and the perimenopause at this age, they didn't want to stand out in a room. They wanted to blend back in because confidence was, you know, they were going through it, hormones, lack of sleep, pressure, all of this stuff. So we then launched a campaign that was very much tied into the why women were lacking confidence, how, and we tried to empower women. We tried to say, like, you know, we got nutritionists involved. How can your diet make you feel good from inside out? And then obviously that links really well and really nicely into an e-com fashion brand where they sell athleisure, they sell gym, you know, leggings, tops, trainers. So we were trying to, again, put exercise at a positive light. Now, I've gone into a lot of detail there, but the reason that I've gone into that is that you can clearly see that when we're talking about that brand's audience, we've looked at the buyer's journey and really tried to understand what is going on in that woman's life to be able to create stories that tie to moments in the media so that then when we take them out to journalists, we know that there is an appetite and an interest when we're pitching and we can offer something new. We can offer something different. And for me, that's where you get the very, very strong tier one pieces of coverage and mentions coming through. Like, you have to create a story that is meaningful. You can't create a story that is very, very clearly just for the brand and is self-serving.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you try to get a link on Wikipedia just because you're in a company, you won't get a link on Wikipedia because
exactly
you have to offer something. Very interesting point, yes. But obviously it takes much more work. And it's I'm pretty sure the cost is much higher as well. So you really have to commit to that. And then obviously it's a longer strategy. How do you approach the customer journey and the customer journey analysis when you're planning a digital PR campaign? Because I think this ties nicely into this and it's obviously like changed a lot with AI now. So I think I'd really love to hear your point of view on this.
AI is actually a brilliant tool. Before you try to get visibility in LMMs, you should be using LMMs to understand your audience even more. So when we're looking at that buyer's journey, I always start with a kickoff brand immersion session. So before I go into ideation with the team, with my partners in that sense, I jump on a call with a brand or face-to-face in person, and we go through sales data, we go through their buyer personas. We try to move from demographics of age, location, stuff like that. And we start to think about behaviors and psychographics. And that is where LMMs, before you try and get cited in them, that's where they can really help you because you can prompt it, create custom GPTs to say, this is the brand I'm working with. These are their buyer personas. This is the demographic. What do they care about? What are their pain points? And then that will bring up and through, you know, media articles, stats pages, research, medical research, all of that stuff. So that you, as an output of this immersion, you are starting to look at what your audience really care about. And when you know what your audience care about, that's where you can take it into ideation and start to come up with campaigns that really make a difference. So now in the new world of LMMs, what I am seeing is that it is not, again, through projects, through audits that we've done, through what I call a digital PR discovery project, it is not just links that matter. Actually, tier one citations really, really matter, especially in competitive niches. So it's almost going full circle back to that traditional PR world that I came from. But the other thing that is really important is, and again, Google has been telling us this for years, but taking that human first lens, how can reviews help us? So don't sleep on things like, you know, getting Google reviews and stuff like that. But the two platforms that I have seen work really well with LMM citations, combined with digital PR campaigns, combined with a solid content and tech SEO strategy that pushes the website up and through, is Trustpilot in the UK. Okay. So they rank, they are very much seen as an authority. So if you are in not just the consumer space, actually, but the B2B space, it is really worth looking at your Trustpilot profile and seeing how you can optimize that, because that is often pulled up and through. Again, just a very quick example, leading comparison site in the UK that I've worked with historically, again, in a previous role, one of their biggest search terms is broadband. So like if you are going to ChatGPT or Gemini and typing in like, what are the best broadband deals? you are seeing that news articles are coming up and through, but you're seeing Trustpilot come up and they're starting to rank products and give feedback on product from reviews. So Trustpilot is really, really important. The other one that I'm seeing, and this is a hot topic at the moment, is Reddit. Now, yeah. Reddit in the digital PR world is we're still understanding how to tap into that, right? Because the Reddit community is strong. The conversations are passionate. And it is very, very, very clear where I think when a brand seeds in their product in a Reddit thread, like you need to create something or have a product that is worthy of a conversation that isn't self-promotional. No. I'm still learning. I'll be open. I'm still learning about the intersection of Reddit and the world that digital PR can come in together. But we are seeing more and more that Google is relying on that because humans are talking about it to come up and through in LMM citations as well. So I guess what I'm trying to say is you can't just invest in digital PR and think that you're going to rank well in ChatGPT and Perplexity. You need to look at the full product spectrum and think, how can my reviews help here? What are people talking about online that is related to my product or offering? How can I make it the best that it possibly can be? Because the world is still evolving. And just as we get used to change with LMMs, something changes again.
Yeah, that's so true. Reddit is really, really interesting platform. And we've been working with Reddit for some time now and been optimizing the citations on Reddit. And it works really well. So it doesn't work for every industry, obviously. But you're in an industry that's being talked about, then it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. And one of the really interesting parts is Digg. You know, D-I-G-G just launched again. And they'll be a new competitor to Reddit.
It will be interesting to see how that then is pulled up and through as well, right?
But I have one question. Do you have a dog?
I do. I have an English bulldog. And
I can hear him a little bit snoring in the background. He's like, he's having a really good sleep.
Do you want me to kick him out of the room?
You don't need to kick him out. Just give him a nice pet and that everybody in the audience knows that
we have a
cute dog who's having a great day. Asleep.
He's an old man, so it's quite a running joke. I'm so used to him snoring, that's why I've got my headphones in. But I've got a chair here and he's fast asleep. But I sit on the chair. Sorry.
No, I just wanted the audience to know because I was hearing it at the beginning silently and I was thinking like, could this be a dog? And then now it's like, okay, he's deep asleep and it's a dog for sure. Just so that everybody knows what it is in the background. I think the discussion around Reddit, Digg, and these platforms that are coming up that are hosting lists and open discussion, they're going to be really, really valuable in this post blog world. That's you know, because it's like through AI, I don't think that a lot of content is being recognized anymore as being valuable.
Yeah.
But these places which are heavily moderated are going to be really valuable because human moderators are going to be, you know, Wikipedia, Reddit, maybe Digg. Yeah. They will be trusted because the moderators are so good. And that's why the data will be so valuable on these platforms. And I think for us as, you know, online marketers and digital PR, it's going to be really valuable to capture these good these good communications or these good discussions about our brand or our products.
Absolutely. And
use them, or maybe even, you know, promote them, put some, you know, light them up, depending on how you want to see it. But I think it's really interesting. But maybe you can say some more on the data that you've been seeing in your past experiences. How important are citations? How important is maybe something like a tier one publication with a link, without a link, with a nofollow link? And even like being mentioned or being discussed on Reddit positively, negatively, with citations, without links.
Yeah. So what I will say is I'll heavily caveat that this varies from industry to industry and brand to brand. So when it comes to LMM optimizations and what we have seen, there is no one size fits all strategy that you can come out and say, I guess there's a bit of a blueprint, right? And it's the same with digital PR in that if you utilize your data and assets and you storytell in the right way and your reviews are good, you can almost place your bet that you are going to rank in the SERPs and also the LMMs. Where I think we're getting a little bit tripped up at the moment is the over-optimization for LMMs, because really where we need to check ourselves is that a lot of the LMMs are still relying on Google to pull that up and through, right? And I think sometimes brands are forgetting that. So what we want to see is make sure your digital PR and SEO foundations are really strong. Do all of the things that you would keep doing, and then your LMM piece naturally will dovetail. What we, as I mentioned, reviews and stuff are really important. But what I'm seeing, I guess it varies. So if we take the energy brands that I mentioned, that was really, really Trustpilot and Reddit were really important for them to be to be cited. And that is very competitive niches. Whereas in the travel space, what I have seen is that tier one media mentions, links and citations are really important. Now, what I will stop and say here is that you, when you're looking for a holiday, you buy with your eyes, don't you? Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense to me that Google is taking that human first approach. And in the articles that for the travel brand, they are very visual. You see the beaches, you see the mountains, you see all of that stuff. So it's no surprise to me that in the LMM SERP results for the travel brand, you saw a lot more citations from top tier media, because that's what human first search results looks like in that sense. Yeah. Looking at the energy and comparison play, people want to know what product they're buying and if it works and if their internet's going to let them down. Because if their internet lets them down, their kids might be screaming because of the iPad or whatever it could be. So that is where I saw, and again, this is all very, very evolving, but that is when I saw a greater dependency in the SERP results or the LMM SERP results of the review platforms combined with the citations. For me, I think you need to be where your audience is hanging out and think about what they're looking for when it comes to your strategy here. So again, travel, very visual. You want to be creating those visual campaigns. It's important. The niches, it might not be as valuable for you to be in the Daily Telegraph or the New York Post. Actually, where you want to be might be Tech Radar. It may be some niches and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think that's a long-winded answer of saying that there is not a one-size-fits-all strategy when it comes to what we are seeing. We're still learning and growing. There are basic hygiene factors and a bit of a blueprint in that you want to be thinking about good digital PR campaigns, quality over quantity. You don't want to be optimizing for the volume of links. Like as I mentioned before, I'd rather take 10 citations that have a handful of follow links, but I know that's exactly where my audience are reading and I'm creating those touch points versus 200 links that I haven't got a clue what the impact is on them. And if you do that, I think you will naturally continue to see your brand come up in LMM results.
No, that makes absolute sense. I mean, that's exactly how we look at it as well. So we always do quality over quantity and always try to do a good audience fit. And what we've done now with the LLMs is that we actually look at what is, you know, we do a real study over several days and look at what prompts are triggering what sources and, you know, where the sources are being pulled from. And then we look at which are the top sources, and that's how we can easily see, okay, Reddit is important for this brand, but for the next brand, Reddit is not important at
not
all.
Exactly.
So one thing I can share, which is really interesting, by the way, is so we work with some hotels. So our main industries are like healthcare, and then we have a lot of B2B, but we do have some hotels as well. And in Germany, TripAdvisor is not that important. It doesn't really play a big role. It's not a big platform as it is in the US or UK. You know, TripAdvisor in the US is so big, it's incredible. But in Germany, it doesn't play a big role. But for the LLMs, it plays a big role. So TripAdvisor is actually being cited as one of the top five sources. But none of the people who run hotels cares about this at all. They never cared. But now we're optimizing these pages just for the LLMs. So that's where the audience, you know, where the LLM
that's
audience
where they're
in
looking.
This case is.
Yeah. And that comes back to that basic hygiene factor, right? In the actually, yes, digital PR campaigns can create a touch point, but TripAdvisor, travel brands, I go and check TripAdvisor before I book a hotel because I want to see real human first reviews. So it makes complete sense that you're advising brands to do that.
Exactly.
And for the first time, these hotels probably need to care a lot more now than they previously have about it. Yeah,
exactly. So one quick thing, one quick note in our own interest. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review or share it with somebody who cares about SEO, digital PR and the future of search. And every bit of that supports us and helps us bring more smart and experienced voices like Shannon to the podcast. So please just do that if you have time for that. Let's get to one of the last parts, which I think is really interesting. And about what do you think about, you know, the shift to AI, LLMs and the future of visibility? Like, We're already in the shift, all right? But what does that mean for digital PR, and how do you see that changing, the AI-driven part? And, you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of people are already writing with AI. How is that seen in the space? And then obviously, like, yeah, is AI, like the visibility AI side already implemented in digital PR, or are you one of the first doing that?
I don't think I'm one of the first. I think there is a few agencies, consultants out there that are singing off the same hymn sheet as me, right? We shouldn't be over-optimizing to make sure we're ranking in these LMM or these large language models. We want to take a step back. We want to make sure that our digital PR foundations are in place, because then we should naturally come up and through. In terms of what the future looks like and the direction of travel that we're going in, I think there is going to be a greater cross-section of traditional PR, branded content, branded communications, digital PR and SEO all coming together. I think above the line is going to also, so broadcast, TV, radio is going to start to play a lot more of an important part.
Really? That's interesting.
Again, coming back to one of the studies that I've done in the competitive spaces with these comparison sites, there was one particular audit that we did where we knew the brand was spending millions on above the line. And really, really interestingly, this brand had a mascot, a very, very famous mascot in the UK that is known for in car insurance, home insurance and stuff like that.
Okay.
They are very, very, very well known. And we saw that above the line, or we were convinced with the data that we had, that above the line investment was also feeding into the LMM results, because the brand sentiment was positive, not just on the review platforms, but the brand affinity was there. And that the mascot, when we were looking at things like broadband comparison, energy comparison and stuff like that, from this competitor challenger brand, the mascot was being cited and that was being pulled up and through. And we were like, whoa, that's really interesting, because this mascot had been, I mean, it's probably 8 or so years that it's been on our TVs and stuff in the UK.
Nice.
So for me, my eye and my head is going there. Like, how is above the line, how is television, how is broadcast going to start to play a factor into LMMs as well? And is it going to influence? It might not, but in some early audits that I've done in competitive niches that are consumer focused and consumer facing, there was definitely, like, I want to say a nod to it. So if I was a CMO looking at LMMs, the future of search, the future of digital, how all of this stuff comes together, right? Because it's a CMO that has to look across all of these platforms and decide investment. I would be pulling my team specialists into a strategy session, and I would be doubling down on holistic campaigns. So campaigns that aren't just built for digital PR, but campaigns that can actually be taken into the broadcast world or radio days, campaigns that can go into newsletters and our CRMs and get the nurture and lead cycle going, campaigns that look to SEO and think, actually, how do we optimize that product page a little bit more? So I think the brands that are going to win in the new LMM focus world that are already investing in digital PR start to look across that full marketing spectrum and see what can be done to continue to evolve and grow into the search space.
I mean, it's really interesting, right? If you look at it, I think that traditional TV has definitely not gotten more expensive on the advertising side, because there's a little less viewers. But I don't think, I won't say it's cheap or anything, right? It's not like the biggest opportunity. But it's definitely not grown, because I remember times when every year it would get more and more expensive. And now I think it's kind of like settled somewhere because of the user interest losing. But what we've seen is, which is also really interesting, is that the LLM, obviously in a deep research mode, will go through YouTube videos and will go through Instagram
YouTube
channels,
shorts.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. YouTube, so. YouTube advertising, YouTube shorts. I've seen that be pulled up and through as well. Yeah. So again, that just comes back to that future looking view of, we can't just think in our SEO, our link building, our digital PR silo. We need to think across the broad spectrum, and user generated content in particular, broadcast, start to think beyond just a traditional digital PR link building campaign. Like, we can work a bit harder, I think.
Yeah. Is digital PR, when we're talking about these big campaigns, obviously, is it something just for mid-sized to big brands, or what can small brands do?
Yeah, so some of the best clients that I have ever worked on are small brands, because there's smaller marketing teams, approval is easy. You often work with, like, I don't know, one or two people, and time is money. So it's in their interest. And you know this from leading an agency, the quicker you can approve things, the quicker you can get things live, the quicker, the more you can do. So again, I've worked with some smaller challenger travel brands, and I love working with travel brands from a digital PR perspective. Like if I was thinking, okay, I don't have that much budget, I'm turning over somewhere between 5 and 10 million pounds a year. Like I'm not TUI, I'm not booking.com, I'm not any of these bigger brands. I'm a smaller niche sustainable hotel, or I am, I don't know, a booking backpacking company, something like that, offering tours. I would look at the most cost-effective options for digital PR. Like I generally split it down into three tactics. So I do what's called product placement. And again, if I'm a travel brand, I'm just going to continue on this vein. It would be, how do I get my brand or my products? Maybe I offer a tour to Brazil, to Rio de Janeiro, or I offer a tour around, I don't know, Iceland and Reykjavik. And it's a bit of a Vikings tour or something like that. How do I get that particular product offering into some of the leading travel pages at news sites that say, like, I don't know, I've got a bank holiday weekend coming up, like 7 best winter sun trips, 7 best trips for Valentine's Day. So I would be looking at cultural moments or calendar moments, looking at my products that I've got, finding journalists that write listicles like 7 best, 10 best, here is the things that you can't miss, getting their contact details and pitching in for inclusion, because that's the most cost effective way of actually getting digital PR up and on its feet as a smaller brand, because you're not investing in a designer. You don't have much data. You don't need a big microsite that sits in development for ages to come up and through and go on websites and stuff. Product placement, it leans into the traditional PR side of things, but you are taking what you've already got and your product offering, and you are speaking to journalists and writers. More often than not as well, you can get some quite deep rooted product or category link pages here, page links, which we know are really important from an SEO perspective. So yeah, that's probably where I would start if I was a smaller brand, looking at what I've got and what I can put out in the world. Yeah. The other really cost-effective, cost-efficient way of slightly lower budget digital PR is also assessing in the business your spokespeople. So if you have, I'm going to use another competitive niche, but like engineering, it's not the most exciting thing in the world, right? Engineering, it's more B2B focused. You might look at that and think, gosh, what can I talk about here? But what you can do is have a look in the business and have you got a engineer that is happy to be quoted in the media? Have you got a chief technology officer? Have you got an MD that is happy to be quoted in the media? And I would be focusing on building out a spokespeople bank that you can pitch for interviews and commentary. So again, I did this in a previous role for an engineering company, and one of their leading engineers in the business was female, which is brilliant because, again, engineering is very male dominated. And if you have a female that is pushing education, technology, pushing for young girls and women to get into robotics, to get into really cool stuff like that and like level the playing field, the media wants to speak to somebody like that because they're trying to change something and they're trying to, you know, leave the engineering world in a bit of a better place. So again, if something breaks in the media, or you could do an interview series and stuff like that, you're not looking at a high cost of development design. You're taking an asset that you've got in the company and you are putting out stories related to very, very important things like, you know, gender equality in a specific industry, or bringing up young stars and rising stars and stuff like that. So the most cost effective, very long, very long winded answer here for you, but the most cost effective digital PR tactics that work for slightly smaller challenger brands are, from my perspective, product placement and spokespeople commentary and interviews.
Nice. Thank you so much. And let's talk a bit about your SMX session. What can people expect? What are you going to talk about? What is it going to be? And that would be interesting because I think going to SMX is really, really cool. And seeing you speak there and being able to talk to you in person, ask questions, follow-up questions is going to be, amazing.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And I've been working on the presentation in the background, as we all do when we do conference talks. So I'm going to be explaining a lot. It's kind of, there's three parts to the story that I want to tell. So there is going to be quite a big light on how digital PR is changing, and how we need to not just think about it from a link building perspective or an LMM perspective. Everything that I want to showcase on stage starts with the buyer and the buyer's journey. So part one is understanding what you can do to map out that buyer's journey, and how you really understand those all important audience pain points and stuff like that. Because when you know your audience and what they want and where they're hanging out, and you're utilizing data internally to map their buyer persona profiles out and their buyer's journey, you are then going to have a greater chance of creating campaigns that are at the top of that funnel in that awareness stage. So phase one of the presentation is the importance of that, and why and how you can do that. So giving some practical tips and a bit of a framework so that you can go and do that. Phase two is why that's important and some of the results that we're seeing, and why that's important in a world of LMMs. So again, Google's been telling us for years that we should be human first, and we need to make helpful content, and it all needs to come back to our audiences. So how can you utilize your buyer personas and your buyer's journey to go into ideation, and what is the positive impact of that on a given industry? Again, trying to give some very, very practical tips and case studies on how we've seen it work. And then the final part is very much future proofing and looking ahead. So you've probably noticed a theme of what I've spoken about today is that I focus very much on relevancy, quality, the brand impact, like looking ahead, how we can make sure that we are setting KPIs and having the right internal conversations with stakeholders and brands and stuff like that, to ensure we know what good looks like. Now, good for an energy brand is going to be very different for good for a travel brand. And what we shouldn't be doing is pinning revenue to these success metrics and stuff like that, because we know digital PR, it's not like paid media. You can't chuck 50 grand in and get 100 back.
Yeah,
we want to be managing expectations. We want to be setting the right standards. I actually have a really good KPI framework that I want to share in that last part of the session. Yeah. That allows us to measure and think about not just links, but citations and social shares and stuff like that. And it's a bit of a methodology for not proving the value, but showcasing the broader impact of digital PR itself. So it's a three-part journey, and I'm very much looking forward to, I guess, taking the audience on that, but also sharing some learnings of where it hasn't worked, so that people can learn from my mistakes and go, actually, that might not work for me and stuff like that too, right? Because marketing isn't an exact science, and we have to test and learn to get it right. Yeah. And I think if you are willing to invest in digital PR, as you've said a good few times, it is expensive. You don't see the results straight away. You need to know what you're going into before you do it.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And just one last note on paid advertising. You chuck 50K into paid advertising, you usually only get 10K back.
So very it takes, true.
It's not always you get 100K back. But yeah, of course, optimized campaigns can work, but it's the same for every campaign.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's the same discussion we always have, like with SEO clients. They're like, oh, SEO takes so long. And then we say, yes, it takes long, but then it sustains longer as well. Then they say, yeah, but can you guarantee an outcome? I'm like, I cannot guarantee an outcome, but we can do the best of our knowledge from the 15 years of experience we have. And then they say, yeah, but with paid media, I get a guaranteed outcome. And they say, no, that is absolutely not true. You'll test for $1,000, then you'll test for $5,000.
Yeah.
You'll have zero, and then you'll test for $30,000. And maybe then you're getting somewhere to, a black zero, you're getting somewhere where you break even, but that doesn't mean that it will continue. And then the crazy part about it is you found out at 30,000 how to make 30,000 into 50,000, but this does not mean you can make 100,000 into 200,000. It breaks again. So it's kind of like paid media is its own challenges, like digital PR and SEO.
Yeah. And the best strategies, I think, actually are when SEO and paid work together. And some of the biggest challenges that we've helped brands with, or I've helped brands in the past, is like, we'll have a brand come to us and say 80% of our revenue is coming from paid media, and it's like, well, you should have invested in SEO a little bit sooner than you have, but we're going to help you with that. So good positive conversations, I think.
It's it's like a stock portfolio. You don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. You want to have, you know, you cannot foresee what happens in the future with paid media or with social or with SEO. So you can't just put everything into one. It's just too dangerous for your business.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed.
Shannon, thank you for the deep and clarity and the honest conversation. I'm really happy about that. It was a lot of fun. And obviously, anybody who wants to, you know, have a deeper conversation, want to listen to the presentation of Shannon, please join us at SMX Munich in March. And, well, you'll be able to hear her track and obviously talk to her in person. And otherwise, if you want to reach out, Shannon, where can people contact you? What's the best place to contact you?
Of course, probably LinkedIn. So you can search me on LinkedIn, drop me a message with any questions. I'm more than happy to I love talking about digital PR, so I'm more than happy to help with any initial questions and challenges like that. So yeah, if you just look for me, Shannon McGurk, you'll find me.
Thank you so much, and thank you for listening to our special episode for the SMX from the Marketing Meets Technology podcast, and see you all in the next episode. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Das war's für diese Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Bis zum nächsten Mal.